at least the 14-year-old is legally old enough to work the field. To work to make money, the more hands you get, the more money you can make. My recommendation, suggestion to the council was that we go back and somehow or other convince the president that more funds are necessary to provide a earn-as-you-learn type of a program. And that's the only way you're going to be able to get those kids out of the fields and go to school, the only way that you're going to convince the father of the family that this could be done. They talked to about using native bicultural and bilingual cooks in the kitchen. Mama also works out there. There's no way you're going to pull her out of that field to go work in the kitchen somewhere if you can't, if you're going to pay her $2 an hour. And she could make better than that out in the field. These are the kind of issues that we addressed ourselves to while we were talking about the situation. Now, in terms of higher education, if we can't even get this kid to get a high school education, we can hardly talk about a college.
Well, what my main emphasis here today is, another issue is declining enrollments. Well, if enrollments are declining, why? It's because the system is not addressing itself to the needs of consumers. So therefore, when it comes to migrant workers and their families, what is the system not doing to maintain a degree of enrollment or to increase the enrollment? God knows we need the students need the education. And the way farmers are going, begging for additional expertise to manage farms, this seems to be a likely avocation for these youngsters to go into, because they already are agriculturally programmed to the soil. So therefore, what better program could we institute than to design more effective programs to encourage them to stay in the agriculture?
As I understand the CDEP program for the entire program, one of the things that they do for children in school is to provide support. In other words, beyond scholarship level, it's actually helping to pay the heating bills or the kids get sick, you know, or whatever. And one of the problems that migrant workers have, in common with a lot of other poor people, is that they tend to marry young and have families young. And they may delay high school education for various reasons, not the least of which is the union of migrant students. Many workers can't pick up the high school equivalent in the army or whatever. They get a little older than 13, 18-year-old graduates from high school going right out of college. So far as I know, I'm not putting down the patient list, okay? I think that's part of it. But I think the migrant office has the same opportunities that anyone else does, and have the options to go into the patient again, also have the option to go a more traditional education route, if that's what he wants to do. And if he's in school, she's in school, and, okay, tuition maybe is paid for under the college building or something like that. But nobody's paying the heating bill, nobody's helping the family medically through that first level of Minnesota Women's. No one's providing any heavy clothing. The whole bit. Maybe your wife has a baby. Nobody pays for that. But that kid is going to drop out of school because he can't afford to stay in, even if somebody does pay a tuition. Why is there the distinction between vocational education and...
Because people at certain levels are not coordinating these various needs and addressing themselves to the total person. It's segmented.
There's a specific program that pays. If you want to go to tech school, I'm not saying you go in grand style, but you are going to eat while you're going. If you want to go to college, it's a whole lot of involvement, especially if you've got a family.
Right. Okay. Thanks, Chairman. Hasn't been able to get them out of grammar school. And I think before we begin to debate what the future of the students is going to be of higher education, I think secondary education is going to have higher education to bring their resources together, like you mentioned, not so much fractionalized, and see how you can approach the basic issues. Basic issues is getting children to school, keeping the school environment with secondary education. And I think this is something new and communication and
I think we have the basics to get that started, because there is a federal approval procedure that's already been developed. The only state that the final project is conducted right now between the states of Washington and Texas. Federal approval whereby this 14-year-old, 15, 16, 17-year-old can go to school while they're up in the state of Washington under the Learn As You Learn type of program, and they can approve credits that are applicable for their secondary education for a diploma. It's already set up in the student record transfer system, so that we can't transfer that now. That is all. The procedure for doing it is there, and they're conducting this pilot project. If it proves successful, and there's no reason why it won't, it can't help but work out okay. I have asked if we could consider somewhat of the same kind of a situation here in Minnesota, that we could develop that kind of a program. So I guess it all depends upon the results of this Texas Washington project.
I know we develop programs and tend to gear up to some long-range success in these programs which never materialize. Is the migrant transfer system or providing education in certain periods of work assignment is crucial? Is this the program working? Is it something they can have people expand out, expand the secondary level, and to have something that they can buttress the document later at the college level? Is it actually working? Is there follow-up data to say that we are providing a certain amount of education to a certain amount of children during the migrant system?
Yeah, I think it is getting much better. What we saw over this past year was a far greater assistance than it was the year before. And I think back 2 years ago when I first implemented that program, what I see going on now, all of it is good. I think it's an excellent vehicle for rapid retrieval of information, education, academic information on a student who is moving around from one state to another. The basics are there. I think it requires some more refinement. Even they themselves are a little rock admitting, but there are still some bugs and still some flaws in there. But it is proving itself an effective vehicle, because we're beginning to get information back that we never used to get that. I think our biggest problem is with the state of Texas itself, in that when a student goes to what we refer to a non-migrant school, there's no distinction between that student and a non-migrant student. Therefore, no information is put into the record transfer system. But they're fully cognizant of the fact that that is the problem we're having, is that we get no information on those kids. So they're trying to set up a system within the regular school system that will still identify the migrant child, so that we can get his academic information into the best school of the data system. And I think, yeah, that it is a possibility.
You brought up here, if I understand you right, that you're concerned that to get these children that are in the field that are 14 to 17 years old out of the field and going to school. Now, if that had happened during the summer months, you know people what would happen. I'm a farmer.
I'm sorry, I didn't clarify that.
If you're talking about after the migrant season is over with and the area is up here, that's... You're going to run into a little difficulty with a bunch of farmers if you start pulling all these people from 14 to 17 years old, because our children aren't going to school during the summer months. And them children, if they're going to go to school in the summer months, and you've got housing needs, which we have to abide by OSHA's rules now, and we start after building housing for all these people, and you're going to have a whole lot more people. Come up with the people we need. And if you're going to send these kids, pull them out of the field and send them to school for this 2.5 months that they're here, you realize how many more people we're going to need and what kind of housing the growers are going to need? I'm not against education, I'm all for it, but it's 2.5 to 3 months our kids aren't in school either. Now, if this
before we go beyond that point, let me know, okay, that is an issue that's always brought up. If our kids don't go to school, why should these kids? A very important fact. That these migrant kids were pulled out of school long before your kids were pulled out of school, and they won't go back to school until after they go back, way after your kids.
Well, my kids, my, My kids come out of school and first part of June,
that's right.
And go back to school and acclimated.
And these might get by just full out from about April.
But our the kids that come to my place, I had school-age kids that were, I'm talking from 14 to 17 years old. I had about five or six left. They all left school within just a few days prior to the day of finishing the mission. And they're all back there before a week before school starts. Mine were now. This might not hold true over the whole thing. But if, like I'm getting to the point, Peter, if we start pulling these migrant kids out of the field, every one of them, and they all go to school for the 2.5 months that they're up here, you realize what that's going to involve.
Agreed. A very valid point. I should have clarified myself. We were talking about running evenings.
No, that's a different problem. That's all. That's fine again. But if you start pulling these children, and for another thing, I had a family there this year that was four, five people. The mother couldn't work the shift. She's an operation. She was working on the field. She could have worked at the end, but she didn't. Three of those kids, he'd have been off there all by himself. It would have not paid him to come to Minnesota if he had to do all the work himself. He couldn't have did it. But he went home with $7,000 because of the store month of work. So, I mean, it just, you have to explain yourself, I think, that this thing would be understood by our education department better than
happened. Would you repeat that figure again, sir?
What's that?
How much money did he make?
I think
because of the kids.
Okay.
$7,000?
Just a minute. I'll explain exactly how it is because. Okay. His name was Feliciano Sestego. He was from Mission, Texas. There was five in the family. His wife did not work. He stayed at home. So, two boys, 15, 17, and a girl, 18, and himself, he was 54. Very excellent worker. Best I've ever had. Anybody in our area, we all compliment because he did work for other people. He worked for me. He did 76 figures himself, many of his family. He worked for a neighbor of mine. He did some of my soybeans. He did some other people's soybeans, eating them. And he did other beet work for another farmer on the side. And when he went home, I asked him, I knew what I had given him. And he says, last year we worked with six. One more of his sons and his wife did work that year. They went home last year with $5,000 from the belt. This year they had four working. Instead of six, they went home with $7,000.
Mr. Terry, might I suggest that this particular issue will be a part of the comprehensive state plan and will be submitted to our office on a live opinion then? Might I suggest that Mr. Rubio's staff in conjunction with Mr. Burton's agreement office and Mr. Rubio have some input into that section dealing with education and comprehensive state plan?
Greece.
I'd like to continue with this a little further on the morning. Talking about the money these people are going. Now this wasn't up in the valley, we had a big problem. But I'm just explaining you with my experiences this year. And these families were very, very well satisfied in the whole area with the money because they had a good year. And these people with the education part of it now, if going in the wrong direction, and pull these children out of the field, these families just wouldn't have the opportunity to make that kind of money. Even if you give them a complete education, everything, pay for them, everything while they're here, they still wouldn't give them the money in their pockets that the homeless can live with the rest of you. Because when they go back to Texas, many of them do not have a job. That is their year's earnings when they're here. We talked about that in one of our first meetings. But the education is fine, and I think it ought to be seen to it that they do go to school. But I think there's a place where these children are up here and they're here for their job. And if this could be worked out in evening classes, if they are going to attend it, that's fine. But during the day, we're going to run into the difficulty. You just can't do it.
I should have clarified more. I realize
no kind of program could ever provide the kind of funds that can substitute for that, for what is in the budget. But the reason I asked, I brought up that point, I wanted to repeat that. And I don't know what's ever happened to the situation, but at the time we were talking about this particular section of the law that guidelines on the food stamp program, there's a clause about the exclusion of earnings of children 18 months. Big fat discussion about, you know, okay, so we excluded what percentage of the total income because there's only one check paid out. What percentage of that goes to the school? So they're saying, well, if he's 12, if he's 14 years old, we're only getting 15%, and if he's 15 years old, we're 25%. But our argument was that first, those kids are faster than the defending adults that are working there. They're worth 100%.
In some cases, they are. In some cases.
So that was number one.
I'd say we have the children start at 14 years of age. You're not getting the full. I had two this year that were 14, both from different families. So they're both were being told by different fathers how to work. It didn't make any difference. Either one of them worked and the capability of working like the ones that were 17, 18 up to their parents' age. But after they're about 17, 16, about starting at 16, they're able to work as well.
That 14-year-old apprentice.
Right. But it takes me a year or two to catch on to it. To know the correct way of going to learn that.
Thank you very much.
Just wondering when we put in the bylaws, put on the bylaws. So we have copies of the bylaws. The committee chairman, John Davis, and Phil Delia, to give us a report on it. I'd like to remind all of you, the committee's met three times, and one time would be a communication question. And keep in mind that bylaws put together has to tie in executive order 1992, which means that the commission of administration of the final in addition to Darren Davis said it's going to be the 15th report that I appreciate the Bob Scott's interest in the commission.
I think we'll go over this bylaws. I can start with Article 1, and we'll just go through it quickly, and I don't know, I guess we have any comment on it. We can, as we go through it, articles, we can have some discussion about it. Hopefully don't get too lengthy, but the thing has been gone over quite a few times and redone, and this copy here is pretty much revised of what exactly everybody wanted in it, but there should be some small items we have to do. Okay, Article 1, name. Name of the organization shall be the Minnesota Task Force Migrant Affairs. Article 2, purpose. Advice the commissioner and the administration, appropriate state agencies and public on matters pertaining to the plans and programs, services, facilities for migrants, seasonal, farm works, and their families in Minnesota. To assist the state coordinator of migrant affairs in the developed coordination program among between the state departments and other public and private providers and services to migrants. To assist the state coordinator in pursuing immediate agency response to the emergency needs of migrants. To serve as source of information to migrants and to the general public regarding state and non-state services available to migrant workers and families to assist in improving and maintaining communications cooperation between public and private service organizations by providing a form of information exchange to research for
all of us on the purpose.
Yeah, we wouldn't have to go through the purpose. Right, we wouldn't have to. Right. I just thought if I didn't bring it. Well, on Article 3 in the membership. Membership on the task force shall include a representative for each of the following organizations. The private sector. You can see who's involved in that.
When it says a representative, is that provided in the document?
No. We have. You could have an alternate, but we haven't. Have we got it stated that he's a voting member? If he's an alternate, we haven't got that in. Because he shouldn't a voting member. If you're an alternate, if you're there at one meeting, it's pretty hard for you to make a decision on some of the things if you're not aware of what's been going on all the time. I don't know if that's...
Mr. Chairman, I think that that's right, because the alternate tribunes have been abused. The reason you don't have a form of proceeding, which is the reason the language is very conclusive, and it does not take into consideration the alternate tribunes. That does not mean that the commissioner feels that officers cannot participate in the meeting, but the primary responsibility is just for those persons who have been appointed.
So what does that mean in terms of conducting business?
That means until, once these bylaws have been adopted, then unless you have 51% of the voting membership, then you cannot conduct business. But if you let Mr. Davis continue on through that, some protection clause is in there.
In the state membership, you can read it through them. Okay. Section 2. All members present shall be entitled to one vote. Section 3. A member of the task force may be removed by commissioner after two consecutive excused, unexcused absences. That's the part where it takes care of the people that don't attend. If that's the case, that they don't attend and don't give any input to the thing, and them are the people we really, you know, if you've got coming missing two meetings, the way it's written in here, it, you're missing a lot of it. And if we have the attendance, what we should have, to make this a good organization, people should attend the meetings. And
that's how we have the older commissioners. I mean, you know, like...
We can't...
I think the private people seem to manage it easier. It's the commissioners who sort of see it as a priority, I guess, or whatever. And I think having them here to do it, and I think is very important.
Right.
And I understand.
This will fall they'll fall under this same bylaw.
But
this
then
article.
How do we pick up a communication with that department? I think that that's the case.
That communication will be maintained through Mr. Avila's office. It's an act of the commissioner, and I think that to reiterate what I said earlier, I agree with you. Try to get the students to make a meeting in, you know, any opportunity you have. It's going to be courageous if you are supposed to be recognized.
You make sense of it, but it's
not. Right.
The vote.
Right. If you are supposed to be recognized, the vote is public. You have to refuse to make a meeting in the office.
Hello, just in support of the conflict of judgment, in our particular case, our member is Commissioner Donald Buckner, who's missed two meetings. The last one missing. Last meeting was our annual managers conference, in which he was the fulcrum, the main person presenting and arranging the conference. And this particular meeting, he's attending an interstate conference in Portland, Oregon. Two conflicts that he couldn't avoid. So, in fairness to him,
if we go through this here, you'll see.
There should be some device.
There's something
or
in here
some
that,
kind of
if you've got the excuses that are good, sound excuses for not being here, other than I just didn't make it. I don't know where we're gonna...
Mr. Carlson, the language in Section 3, you noticed, the words may be supplemented from the word shall. And we realize that there are extenuating circumstances that would necessitate sometimes an individual missing more than perhaps two meetings.
This is the reason the language is as it is, in emphasis to section. And I think the bylaw committee has taken initiative to establish meetings well in advance. When Mr. Davis went to page 6, you see where the meetings have been scheduled well in advance. Now, other circumstances, like the situation that you just described, other circumstances, you know, in some cases there are meetings already scheduled. I have meetings that I have to go to in Washington in April. I know there's a past year's meeting in April. Not too much I can do about that, but I think this is something that the executive council and the task force should take into consideration when these meetings are already pre-scheduled. And it's not too, this is not emphatically stated that any two consecutive positions in any case will be terminated.
You have the word made in other words. I was thinking of the voting privilege. I think that should continue with,
If this thing is important enough for all the things we've been talking about here all the time, that somehow, some way, that this meeting can be set up, that people can attend unless something comes up unexpectedly in between the time it's set up, that I know on boards I've been on, that they call ahead and find out, okay, we're going to set a date, and far enough in advance, then you get a return from them saying, well, I can't make that date, and far enough, because I've already got a meeting scheduled for that date. Not because I'm going to take a trip, or I'm going to do this, or I'm going to do that, some poor excuses. But there's got to be some time, four times of a year, that we should all be able to attend. Sickness or something can fall into that thing, you can't make it. But there's got to be a way that you should be able to get, what have we got, 20, how many people? About 20 members, that there should be a way that we should at least have 51% of them. There's got to be something wrong if we can't.
How about
then there isn't enough. This year, the committee we're talking about, where we're all members of, doesn't mean much if it doesn't have enough priority to some other things. Then we're doing here a lot of work, and it doesn't mean a lot. If we haven't got any priority to a lot of other things, in our state officer and our private lives.
I think perhaps if there's one named alternate, it would be acceptable to continue the voting for us.
If he'd be in it.
Yeah, I think that there would be something that would be acceptable.
Neither one.
We discussed this at the thing. The reason why I guess it wasn't put in here, because if the people isn't in attendance all the time and all of a sudden he's been missing a half a dozen meetings and something major comes up and it's up to him to vote on it, and it's been talked about at every meeting before, and all now this meeting we're going to vote on it, and the guy wasn't bought and aware of it. That problem you could run into, that he wasn't aware of what he's voting on.
Well, that is good minutes, I think.
Yeah, if that minutes are taken, if that's...
Okay.
Let's see. Section 4. Vacancies on task force shall be filled by appointment from the commissioner. That also... is the way it'll be, but we can be in recommendation to the commissioner if we believe that there's somebody that should be a member of this task force. We could recommend it to the commissioner, and it could be in his discretion. Right. Officers. Task force officers shall be two chairpersons and two vice chairpersons. Three persons from the task force shall serve as executive counsel for 1 year term. The latter of which shall be at the discretion of the task force. The membership contained under this part shall constitute the executive council. If there's any question on why the two chairpersons and vice chairpersons, the reason for that is because of when in the attendance of the thing to conduct the...
I have a question. When you say the latter of which shall be at the discretion of the task force, are you talking about the selection of two people or the... serving another 1 year term.
The
selection of the people would be at the task force.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Reno, I think that's a different statement. Not to the extent of the area, but the latter is there to recognize the part of the
I used to call the Secretary of Commerce and not a Secretary of Commerce.
draft that we need to pick it up board, pick it from the rear, pick it up
You're not a, what you've got, a board, my idea, a board is your complete board of directors. You've got subcommittees or committees or whatever we call it here, the council. It's an advisory a group that will can advise to the rest of the board of directors on things or whatever. It's to conduct for the committees for some of the things, like just making up our bylaws here. It wasn't done by the whole board of directors, it was done by the committee. And it really isn't the directors. It wouldn't be the, then what would we call the whole board? They're directors. Really, I don't know. I think that'd be a problem. You have to have it as a...
Remember that...
Executive committee is really... Executive board, you could say that. The board of directors and the executive board, you could be stated that way.
Wow.
I see it as a committee.
Nominations for the recommendations to be submitted to the Commissioner of Administration by the task force shall be from the floor. The election shall be by sacred ballot. A minimum of 3 names shall be submitted for appointment with corresponding votes. The Commissioner shall then appoint 1 such person, co-chairperson, and another vice chairperson to represent the section, private, or state from which said names were placed in nomination. Final appointment shall be presented to the co-chairperson at the regular scheduled meeting in April. Section 3. At January 76th meeting, task force members shall select by sacred ballot candidates for co-chairperson state and vice chairperson state, who shall then be appointed by the commissioner at the January 1977 meeting. The task force members shall select by sacred ballot candidates for co-chairpersons, private vice chairpersons, private, who shall then be appointed by the commissioner. Therefore, in even number of years, a co-chairperson and a vice chairperson shall be elected at the January meeting. In odd number of years, a co-chairperson and a vice chairperson shall be elected. The procedure contained herein shall meet the requirements of Section 1 and 2 of this part.
If I may kind of make me describe the whole section, because there's a lot of private, and then public. In essence, what we're trying to do is since we're going to have 2 co-chairpersons and 2 vice chairpersons, in 1977, we will have the private section to the public. The state, okay. The state come up for the task force to select the names of those candidates. It will be submitted to the commission for appointment of a co-chairperson and vice chairperson, which means we will have the private sector people still staying on until the following year. I'm sorry, 76 and then 77, the private sector changes over. So that there's always a turnover of the higher-ups every other year. You know, every year there will be one group going on.
It took us a lot of time to come up with
a wording
and a program that you wouldn't have everybody of leaving this thing at the same time, and you've got a complete new board, and you don't where do they leave off, and where do we start? And that somebody in the knowing is there at all times, and they can be brought up to the information that they've got to know, or the knowledge that they need to know from the people that are on the board, and try to have a turnover of the board without any problems running into not knowing what's going on. Section 4, responsibility and authority for control, task force meetings, and carrying out the provisions set forth in 3. These bylaws shall be between the task force co-chair and the state co-chair person having such authority during even number meetings, and the private sector co-chair person having such authority during odd number meetings. administrative planning and related task force responsibility shall be coordinated efforts of both chairpersons.
Can I suggest that responsibility and authority for chairing task force meetings rather than controlling? I'm sorry, I'm not sure to be a member of the task force to control by the chair.
Any issue or procedure not coordinated or carried out jointly by the co-chairperson in a proper administrative manner, such manner to be determined by the executive council, shall be a matter to be acted upon by the council, requiring a simple majority vote on action defined under this part.
We would like to see a court of the private and but some cases, communications, we break down. And if this is the case, then we would be sure that the state of the town would be in a position to act up on any conflict or communication breakdowns and carry on. So, any conflict that comes between the two chairpersons should be a conflict that should be resolved if it gets to that point. And the executive council has the authority to determine what type of conflict is going to be.
Duties. Section 1. Duties of the chairperson shall be to conduct meetings according to the prescribed manner, to serve in the ex officio status on all standing and special committees, to call special meetings as necessary, to represent the group officially with authorization and executive council, cast a vote only in case of a tie. The duties of the vice chairperson shall be to serve as presiding officer at meetings in the absence of the chairperson, to assist generally in the duties of the chairperson, to serve as ex officio member to all standing and special committees as requested by the chairperson. The Office of Migrant Affairs shall assist the task force in following duties: recording, presenting, and filing all minutes of the organization, taking a representative attendance record, and determining the voting status of those present, providing the administrative services thereon to include, but not to limit to, forwarding meeting notices and agenda to all regular and ad hoc members and minimum of 2 weeks prior to such meetings. Committees. A chairperson shall appoint all committees as needed, deemed necessary by the task force. Membership on committee shall be for 1 year unless specified for a particular purpose. Committee action may be taken in a quorum of 51% of its membership is present. A committee resolution requiring 51% of the voting membership present for passage. Committee vacancies shall be filled by appointment of the chairpersons. This would be during the year before our. All committee meetings are open to the public. Non-members may speak but may not vote. The migrant task force shall be meet quarterly on a date set aside by the executive council, which falls within the weeks contained the following date: late January, early April, late August, late November, or early December. Special meetings may be called by the executive council or upon written request of 51% of the voting membership. A quorum for conducting business of the task force shall be 51% of the members empowered to vote. any person or group wishing to be on the agenda must submit in writing to the chairperson of the task force 2 weeks prior to the regular scheduled meeting a request stating the nature of the issue and amount of the time required. Said person shall be notified of the status of the informative agenda requested within a week. Amendment. Changes in the bylaw as herein stated must be proposed by special committee and presented in writing to all voting members at least 30 days in advance of the date specified for their presentation to the Commissioner of Administration, approval requiring 51% vote of the voting members' membership subject to the final approval of the Commission. More questions?
I wonder if 2 weeks is enough to note it. Perhaps if we have an informal notice ahead of time, particularly I think for the upper levels of the state agencies, calendars close in much faster than 2 weeks. Even my calendar closes in faster than that. If we're only going to meet four times a year, it seems that we could pick the date farther in advance than that.
We can set up a system to get comfortable. We can extend kind of official thing, you know, again, from the school's price, from a formal kind of notice, waiting for.
But I wonder if it's not specified in the bylaw.
We can do that. We can change that to the state government. I'm fired for the
minute. I think we're kind of really wrong.
We don't want to expect to be like a different meeting for. November, December, but we set a meeting today. But I was thinking, like in other groups, they set the meeting to just a date for the next meeting at the meeting that you're attending.
Very good.
Once the bylaws have been adopted, that the task force to make a decision at the April meeting when the officers are stated at that time which date you will be meeting at, when they take them up. I agree with you, it's going to be difficult for some of us to set aside, you know, the last part of the month, instead of going to the board. I think that might be one of the things that we're going to talk about.
Available at the meeting.
take up the business and the open forum and go get stuff.
Mr. Chairman, one of the things that the bylaws does not address sexual and abuse responsibilities of the executive council and executive committee, Mr. Chairman, is probably something that the bylaws committee might want to take into consideration. It was a bit of a very good part. We went to, when I say we,
raised an issue. I'm not sure whether it belongs in the bylaws. Section doesn't, but it does have a lot to do with the functioning of the committees, including the executive committee. And that is the question that was raised two meetings ago as to whether the travel of private members of the committee would be reimbursed in the same way that a tax would. And I just think we've got an answer to that. Anybody?
It's not quite clear on it, as far as the question.
Is that a memorandum that we think to the commission go back and do that?
Okay. The concern here was, the commission was somewhat concerned that early in establishing the task force with some of the agencies for both sides of the fence, so we're beginning to abuse the privileges of office and what have you. And we felt that if we began to reimburse the travel alternates as well as state agencies travel out of their particular budget of their account, which doesn't just exclude private sector dollars. But here again, if we're going to begin to reimburse officers, we can put a restriction on the state agency side that says that certain members don't attend. But on the private sector side, we don't have that authority for the private sector person that we should attend. But we do want to ensure that the private sector does attend by not reimbursing officers.
And that's the question is not ultimate, but there's other meetings of standing or ad hoc committees appointed by the chairman of the session.
Oh, yeah, they'll be reimbursed, but I think that,
They have not been.
I thought they were. Yeah, the question came up at the same time that we were talking about the alternate. The question came up in terms of what kind of funding we had at this time, whether we could reimburse, and no final decision was made on the committee's funding.
Well, might I go on record as saying that, subcommittee members shall be reimbursed, but I think it should be up to the discretion of the chairman of the task force, as well as the council, to only call task force meetings in different places, if it's absolutely necessary. I think if they just travel out of their own account, Well, for instance, I think that, as I mentioned to Mr. Lee, when we discussed this a couple days ago, I think that when we appoint subcommittees, it would be very easy to call a meeting and say, they are here, but this hypothetically, you know. And I'm saying that this type of professional discussion should be used. Can we take care of business if a subcommittee has been appointed? Cannot the subcommittee take care of a certain amount of business over the telephone instead of meeting in Duluth or Fargo or Fort Worth, you know, what have you? This is all I'm saying. Or St. Paul. Yeah, this is all I'm saying. But it, you know, it's very easy that we could meet the subcommittee in D.C. and have a lot of information.
Any more comments on that?
Yes, sir.
It shouldn't specifically say Commissioner of Administration, Section 4 of Article 3. Vacancies on the task force shall be filled by appointing from the commissioner. I think it should say of administration. And in Section 4 of the next part was, and suggestion of control change to chair. You know what that talks about, but not.
What is the procedure for approving the bylaws? We don't have a form here. And we were not given these 30 days in advance. Do we wait until the next one? In this case, are we just talking about it, or what's going on?
I don't know.
There's no section in here that specifies how the bylaws itself can be approved. Yeah, it changes in the bylaws.
This is something that we don't need.
That you will be using
Okay, I use that just as an example, but, you know, like, that was last week, and today we're only getting an answer to it. And I think that somehow there's got to be better communication between us out in our area and this task. It just seems like, you know, we're not accomplishing any more today than we did today, and we don't even know the answers to some of our questions or the names.
Mr. Chairman, isn't the Migrant Affairs Office tasked with the responsibility of carrying out the administrative aspects of the things that the task force was passing upon?
I thought that the Victor himself was quite a well mentioned in this area today. What do you feel about this?
Well, number one, you know, like this memorandum, I guess what I'm hearing is that any resolution that they're passing the task force, as they are being resolved, they, like, we needed to get this memorandum out to our members, so that at least someone would have been able to see or question while in office to find out clarification that this memorandum did not address itself to the committee members. Continuous follow-up procedure for informing the task force members on what is being.
Sometimes I don't think it's even action. We raise a question and we want it immediately, and we don't even get the information. It isn't that a job has to be done so much as we just want to answer it. And sometimes it's questions that are raised and not actually motioned. I don't know if I heard any questions.
Yeah, this is a very good point. I think a number of questions have been raised today, but the motions have been.
And see, and many times when we raise the question, we don't know whether, you know, maybe in the question, if an interest is there to gather some kind of information, if we're told that we send it out. See, many times, number one is the cost of, you know, how much do we duplicate to not go off that, but say we want a document, let's just say a bill, let's see how it's going to take it. Do we just send it to that interested person, or do we send it to all those board members so they can have the two intentions with it? When we want information out, there's a procedure here. How much do we duplicate this and after the process?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Adelio, I don't think that this is a particular issue that Suzanne, I guess that's the difference in the same thing. Suzanne is concerned about is the lack of getting feedback on certain questions that have been raised. For certain administrative procedures in addressing the sheriff, but also addressing the sheriff to those problems. I think perhaps rather than to amend the bylaws related to administrative procedures for the Migrant Task Force office, this is something that should be worked out administratively. Perhaps the Migrant Task Force should, the Migrant Office should accept as one of its goals is to. Disciplined to all task force members within 30 days after the meeting and to provide answers and follow-up instructions within 45 days after the task force members are going to meet over 45 days.
You said most of the meetings are gathered on a personal need, particularly in the men's office, looking for the person, you know, what's going on.
The Migrant Affairs Office, in the part of the government executive order, is administrative support for the task force. And under circumstances, as a member of the task force, maybe this is something the task force wants to take into consideration.